It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. When Lee Hawkins was a budding journalist at UW-Madison's Badger Herald, he was just beginning a decades-long journey to understanding the connection between his family history and the trauma and physical violence he endured growing up.
Now Hawkins is out with a memoir tracing the history of violence toward Black people during slavery and the Jim Crow era of segregation, and connecting it with how a Black parent may choose to discipline their child now using corporal punishment.
Hawkins views this form of violence as a direct result of the oppression by white people rooted in southern plantations generations ago.
The book is called I Am Nobody's Slave: How Uncovering My Family's History Set Me Free. Hawkins is a former writer for the Wall Street Journal. He also was a business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin State Journal. Lee Hawkins, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much.
You describe in your book as a home that is organized chaos, and your teen years, you're really focused on building this resume. So you have this ticket out of your home and away from your parents. Can you talk a little bit about what was happening behind closed doors as you were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, this, I said organized chaos, but it was actually, you know, quite structured in the sense that my father was a Jim Crow survivor who grew up in Alabama before moving to Minnesota when he was 12. And he sort of brought Jim Crow Alabama to Minnesota. We were in the suburbs. We were one of the few Black families, although we were in the Black community on the weekends. And there was a lot there to deal with. You know, the fact there was a lot of racism, there was a high scrutiny on us as one of the few Black families, in particular me as a Black boy. And this book really is a 400-year investigation into the intergenerational effects of slavery, Jim Crow, and the Great Migration on the way that I and many other Black people whose ancestors lived through slavery and Jim Crow was raised. And so, you know, it's a very complicated story, and it's one story that forces us to look at the complexity of families, and especially with the use of the belt or corporal punishment, as some people call it, in my community or in the community that I was in, the belt was seen as a protective measure to keep a Black child from getting killed by the police or getting killed in their community. And so it was used to scare us into perfect behavior. And so that wasn't something that I thought I wanted to continue to have to deal with in my life, but I saw it as a necessity as a Black boy. Many of my other friends who experienced it saw it the same way. And there are many people who, as adults today, would say that it was good for them and it was something that they wish was still done to children more frequently than it is.
I want to talk about the third grade where you're struggling so much in math and this teacher, Miss Bloomer, who is so racist and demeaning to you and getting you into so much trouble at home. And she puts you in this separate wooden partition from the class. What did that trauma tell you about your education as a Black student?
I recognize as a third grader that nobody was going to come to save me, and that if I got in trouble at school, I was gonna get in trouble at home. And, you know, that's a very climactic part of the book, because it really sets the stage for what is commonly referred to by scholars as adultification. Mm. Whereas, you know, Black boys in elementary school are largely thought to around the age eight, thought to be 3 or 4 years older on average than they really are. And that's something that follows them throughout their lifetime or their socialization as kids. And so I had to grow up fast, and there was really nobody coming to save me. And I just understood that the educational system, you know, as an institution was not there to support me. But there were individuals besides Mrs. Bloomer. I had other teachers who were very encouraging. And I also had a strong village outside of the school in my church and community organizations that were kind of like a safety net for me.
We're talking with Lee Hawkins, a former Wall Street Journal writer, former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter, UW-Madison alum. The new book is called I Am Nobody's Slave. In the early 90s, you and your dad go to Alabama to uncover more about your dad's family history in the Deep South and under Jim Crow. How did that experience change you and your dad's relationship?
Well, first of all, my father and I had a very close relationship all the way from the time I was a little boy. My father was an omnipresent father. And so once again, it's really hard for people sometimes to get their mind, especially outside of the African-American community, to get their minds around how someone who could spank you with a belt could also, you know, be as present and loving as my father was. And that complexity is something that I sort of feel about my country too. You know, like, how could a country that is supposed to, you know, love us be so cruel to us as African Americans? And so I think that that was a struggle that my father was going through in his time, because he was someone who enlisted in the Vietnam era Air Force, despite the fact that he was born in Alabama and didn't even have rights equal to a white person, but he still loved his country at a time when his country didn't love him back. And so when we went to Alabama in 1991, it was the first step in his sort of journey and evolution that he took towards opening up to talk about the things that touched him in too tender of a place to discuss when we were kids about Alabama. And so what that did for our relationship when we interviewed an uncle down there who was, I believe, around 93 years old, and he was about to die, but he told us all about his grandmother. And it turned out in my research, I later find that his grandmother was my great-great-grandmother, and she was the last generation in my family to live through enslavement. And she spent the first 25 years or so of her life enslaved. And then the last 60 to 70 years, we're not sure quite of her age, but 60 to 70 years living under Jim Crow apartheid. And so that he planted the seed, and that was, you know, just total wonderment for both me and my father, because he was giving us this piece of American history that was so critical to this project. And I got away from it, you know, for many decades, but the seed for this project was planted on that trip. And I think it did wonders, because it made my father understand how critical it was for him to empower me to do this research and also benefit from it for his own healing as well.
In your interviews with him, I'm wondering, you're a journalist and you are trying to preserve this history and probe this history. For others, how did you approach these interviews when you were really trying to uncover such a painful family history, but also be objective about it?
I was approaching it, trying my best to approach it in a non-judgmental way, and in a loving way. And when I believe that the highest form of love is actually curiosity and asking questions, you know, why did this happen? How did this happen? What was happening at the time when this or that happened? And I think that, you know, not just with my story, but when people do these stories, it's very critical, especially if you're talking about things that were hard as a child for you to take, and then you're interviewing your parents or your grandparents to get some understanding of why they happen. It's very important to leave yourself open to giving them a chance to explain the context. I have a method that can be used for other people studying their family history with the focus of trying to ask those questions and be objective and try to help families get through remembrances of very difficult circumstances. It's called the Future Method, Family Unity Through Understanding Roots and Experiences. And I found a lot of healing in that. I think my father did as well. My little sister, who also has engaged in this process with us. We became closer through this process because this forced us to learn to confront the past and move forward together. There's a lot of trauma that goes with talking about difficult stories from your family's history. You know, Jim Crow to me, I found out was something totally different than what I thought it was growing up. I was taught to believe that Jim Crow was segregation. But when I went and did this research, I found out in interviewing my father, I found out that Jim Crow, particularly to my family, was a crime against humanity. My grandfather was murdered. Both of my great-grandfathers were murdered when my grandparents were children. And so, you know, this was a system of violence that our American government codified and, you know, made laws from 1619 all the way through 1964 that mandated that white people were superior and that we couldn't compete in voting, we couldn't compete in for jobs, we couldn't compete on the same footing as a white person, but somehow we still made it. It's just a testament to how incredible African Americans have been in this country and have often made it look easy in terms of what we endured because we haven't stopped to even think about it or to talk with our children about what we went through a lot of times. And so, yeah, as a journalist, I had to navigate through all of that and to be really conscientious about maintaining my composure and being sensitive to everybody involved.
Lee, I want to talk about the title, I Am Nobody's Slave. I think the words come up in the therapist's office when you say it or you think it in front of your mom and dad. Can you talk about those few words?
When I had started my career at the Wall Street Journal, it was a very high time in my life, but I started to have some nightmares. And they were actually nightmares that about some of the childhood corporal punishment that I had received. And I think the sad part about it was that my father, when I was a kid, also had nightmares. And when I would wake up in the morning, I would sometimes ask him, what were you dreaming about? And he would say, Alabama. But he would never go into detail. So I think one of the heartbreaking aspects of this was that that's intergenerational trauma at its finest kind of playing out. And because of that, we actually ended up going to therapy, and it came out in these therapy sessions that the belt was a big part of my childhood and that I could not get past it because my body revolted. And there are a lot of other things and expectations in my life that have been projected upon me that really are not authentic and are not, you know, are not consistent with the liberated spirit that I really wanted to be. And so in my discussion with my family, with my parents, I said, I'm nobody's slave, you know, and that was meant to be, that was probably my first understanding that so many of the things that I was struggling with were vestiges of slavery, but I could not put my finger on the truth because I hadn't done the research. And so that's what this book is really about, is we get into the ways that we see enslavement and Jim Crow in the modern society, in the family, in our school system, in our pop culture, and not just on the Black side of my family, but also on the white side of my family, because I did take a DNA test and find out that my blood is 20%. My DNA traces back to Wales, to a white family in Wales. And, you know, I also investigated why that was. And I found out so much more about the truth of America and why it is that so many African Americans have European DNA.
I want to land on mental health because I was thinking of you as Governor Tony Evers in a State of the State address called this year the Year of the Kid, and is seeking in his budget hundreds of millions of dollars to put toward improving mental health for young people in public schools. And I'm wondering your insights, where are the gaps in mental health resources as you went through your experiences and story, and especially for communities of color?
I think it's very important, and particularly in a place like Wisconsin, where there's a lot of hyper-segregation. In Milwaukee in particular, was living there was a wonderful experience, but one of the things that really struck me was just how segregated it was, and the disconnect between Milwaukee and its Black community and the rest of the city. And also even in Madison, on the south side of Madison, there was a little bit of a disconnect there as well. And I think that for me, a lot of my advantages came from the sad truth that so much of your outcome is tied to your zip code. Mm. And there's just a tremendous weight that a lot of children across economic classes and across races are dealing with right now. And so I think it's a very critical time for policymakers to be checking the temperature of children on the mental health front and figuring out, as you say, where the gaps are. And I would say right now, the most important thing is in the research for how we can continue to make schools more equitable in terms of the way students are treated. You know, it's referred to as woke to talk about the rights of LGBTQ students or the rights of Black students or the rights of students who maybe come from undocumented immigrant families or what have you. But the truth is if a student is in a school system, the obligation is for them to not have to worry about much else other than have a learning, you know, and because they're bringing a lot of things into the classroom that the teachers don't always know about. And it is important for schools to be almost a safe space for children. But for some children, this could be one of the few places where they have a consistent meal. And all of that has a sort of collective effect on the mental health of children. And I just love that Wisconsin is out front on that. And I hope it brings some great change. And already, you know, we know that statistically it's a state where there's an opportunity gap, and I'd like to see that change. And I also think it's important to think about white students who may come from a working class background or may also be dealing with poverty, and understanding that it's not always about race. You know, it's a lot of times it's about class and the exposure to resources and the exposure to a village, a strong village where there's a lot of love, and also through educators who have the sensitivity to respect children from all backgrounds.
Lee, thank you for your book. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Lee Hawkins' new memoir, it's called I Am Nobody's Slave. He formerly wrote for the Wall Street Journal. He was also a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wisconsin State Journal. Hawkins now hosts a podcast series in collaboration with American Public Media.